The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network is proud to present Mark Weber's World Watch. Mark Weber is director of the Institute for Historical Review, an independent think tank and publishing center. Visit them at ihr.org. And now, here's your host, Mark Weber.
Hello. Many critics of Israel and its policies make a sharp distinction between Israel and its state ideology, Zionism, on the one hand, and Judaism, or the Jewish religious tradition and outlook, on the other. Anti-Zionist groups with names such as Jewish Voice for Peace or Jews for Justice for Palestinians, and anti-Zionist periodicals such as the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, emphasize humanistic aspects of the Jewish tradition, and they appeal to Jews to reject Zionism and instead embrace humanistic features of Judaism and the Jewish tradition. Such groups, while critical of Israel and its policies, claim that the organized Jewish community has played a basically positive role in society, but that sometime in the 20th century, most Jews somehow jumped the track by embracing Zionism and its aggressive nationalism. In fact, and as I'll explain today, the cruel and arrogant policies of Israel and the attitudes of what is called the Israel lobby or the Jewish lobby or the organized Jewish community are not an aberration, but rather are features of an outlook that is rooted in Jewish religious writings and in centuries of Jewish tradition. Most people prefer pleasant myths to unpleasant truths and prefer to believe what is most comfortable and agreeable. That's one reason why so many of us like to think that all religions fundamentally share common humanistic core values and are all striving, each in its own way, for the same ultimate truth. But Judaism is not just another religion. It's unique among the world's major religions. In its essence, the core values and ethos of Judaism are markedly unlike those of Christianity, Islam, and the world's other great religions. Christians believe that Jesus suffered and died for all people, and Christians are called upon to spread the Christian message to humanity. In the same way, Muslims believe that the message of the Quran is meant for all humanity, and they are called upon to bring everyone to Islam. But that's not the message of Judaism. Its teachings are not meant for all people. Its morality is not universal. Judaism is a religion for one particular people or community. The Jewish religion is based not on a relationship between God and humanity, but rather on a so-called covenant or contract between God and a chosen people, the Jews or Hebrews, or what is sometimes called the people of Israel. The major holidays in the Christian calendar, such as Christmas, Easter, and so forth, recall significant dates in the life of Jesus. Similarly, the major holidays of the Muslim calendar recall key dates in the life of Muhammad. But the major holidays of the Jewish calendar recall important events in the history of the Jewish people. One major reason why the role of the organized Jewish community is a problem in our society is because most Jews in America manifest a strong loyalty to a foreign country, Israel, that, since its founding in 1948, has been embroiled in seemingly endless crises and conflicts with its neighbors. But there is another reason. The role of the Jewish community is also a harmful one, because Jews are encouraged to regard themselves as separate from the rest of humanity and as members of a community with interests quite distinct from those of everyone else. This us versus them attitude, this mindset that sees Jews as distinct from the rest of humanity and which views non-Jews with distrust, is rooted in the Jewish religion and in centuries of tradition. Christians are supposed to live their lives in accord with the Bible, and especially the teachings of Jesus as laid out in the four Gospels of the New Testament, just as Muslims are supposed to live their lives in accord with the Quran. Similarly, Jews are supposed to live their lives in accord with the principles laid out in the Hebrew Scriptures, which is also known as the Old Testament. The Hebrew Scriptures tell how Jews should think of themselves and how they should interact with non-Jews. A core message of the Hebrew Scriptures is that Jews are a divinely chosen people, a unique community that is distinct from the rest of humanity. In the book of Deuteronomy, for example, we read, "For you are a people holy to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for his own possession out of all the peoples that are on the face of the earth." The Jewish scriptures also refer to Jews or Hebrews as a people that shall dwell alone, or, in another translation, as a people dwelling alone and not reckoning itself among the nations. In the book of Exodus, we read of the Jews as a people distinct from all other people that are upon the face of the earth. The scriptures also explain that if Jews uphold the covenant and maintain their separateness from all others, they will be rewarded with great wealth and power over other peoples. In one chapter of the book of Deuteronomy, Jews are promised that God, quote, "will set you high above all the nations of the earth," and that "all the people of the earth shall see that you are called by the name of the Lord, and they shall be afraid of you." In another passage, God tells the Jews, "For the Lord your God will bless you as he promised you, and you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow, and you shall rule over many nations, but they shall not rule over you." In the book of Genesis, we read, "May God give you of the dew of heaven, and of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine. Let peoples serve you, and nations bow down to you." In another passage in the book of Deuteronomy, God promises to Jews, "to give you with great and goodly cities which you did not build, and houses full of all good things which you did not fill, and cisterns hewn out which you did not hew, and vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant." In the book of Isaiah, we read, "Foreigners shall build up your walls, and their kings shall minister to you. For the nation and kingdom that will not serve you shall perish. The sons of those who oppressed you shall come bending low to you, and all who despised you shall bow down at your feet. Aliens shall stand and feed your flocks. Foreigners shall be your plowmen and vine dressers. You shall eat the wealth of the nations, and in their riches you shall glory." In the book of Joshua, we read, "I will give you a land on which you had not labored, and cities which you had not built, and you dwell therein. You eat the fruit of vineyards and olive yards which you did not plant." In the book of Psalms, God says to the Jews, "Ask of me, and I shall make the nations your heritage, and the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron, and dash them to pieces like a potter's wheel." In the book of Deuteronomy, Jews are promised, "Then the Lord will drive out all these nations before you, and you will dispossess nations greater and mightier than yourselves. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads shall be yours. No man shall be able to stand against you. The Lord your God will lay the fear of you and the dread of you upon all the land that you shall tread, as he promised you." In another passage, we are told that God says to his chosen people, "This day I will begin to put the dread and fear of you upon the peoples that are under the whole heaven, who shall hear the report of you, and shall tremble and be in anguish because of you." The moral code laid out in the Hebrew Scriptures commands one standard for Jews and another for non-Jews. In keeping with this ethnocentric morality, Jews are told that they must discriminate against non-Jews. In the book of Deuteronomy, we read that God commands the Jews, "You shall not lend upon interest to your brother, interest on money, interest on victuals, interest on anything that is lent for interest. To a foreigner, that is, a non-Jew, you may lend upon interest, but to your brother you shall not lend upon interest."
Don't go away, because there's more on Mark Weber's World Watch. You're listening to the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Visit us at reasonradionetwork.com.
Suspected Nazi death camp guard John Demjanjuk has arrived in Germany to face a warrant accusing him of being accessory to the murder of some 29,000 Jews and others. Demjanjuk's plane landed early Tuesday morning at Munich's airport. The plane quickly taxied into a hangar, accompanied by police vehicles and an ambulance. The 89-year-old, who allegedly is in poor health, left Cleveland Monday. He was taken to the airport in an ambulance after meeting with immigration officials.
He should not be sent anywhere, because having to go through a flight and what's waiting at the other end in Germany would amount to torture to somebody in his condition and age.
Demjanjuk's deportation comes 4 days after the U.S. Supreme Court refused to consider his request to block deportation. In 2002, the United States stripped Demjanjuk of his citizenship. 3 years later, an immigration judge ruled he could be deported to Germany, Poland, or Ukraine. It was in March that Munich prosecutors issued an arrest warrant for him. The Ukrainian-born Demjanjuk has repeatedly denied any Nazi accusations. He says he was a Red Army soldier who was captured by the Nazis, spending the rest of World War II as a prisoner of war. Demjanjuk is expected to be taken to a Munich prison where he'll be formally arrested and his condition checked by a doctor. His alleged illness may be, in fact, the key to his fate. A German court is expected to decide whether he's medically fit to stand trial. No matter the decision, he's expected to spend the rest of his life in Germany. Sophia Manos, The Associated Press.
Let's return to Mark Weber's World Watch, brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, reasonradionetwork.com. And now, here is your host, Mark Weber.
Many portions of the Hebrew Scriptures, especially the books of Joshua, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, tell of genocidal mass killings of non-Jews. The Jewish God repeatedly calls on his chosen people to exterminate non-Jews. The Jewish Scriptures are perhaps the oldest historical record anywhere of systematic genocide. In the 7th chapter of the book of Deuteronomy, we read, "When the Lord your God brings you into the land which you are entering to take possession of it, and clears away many nations before you, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than yourselves, and when the Lord your God gives them over to you, and you defeat them, then you must utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them and show no mercy to them. And you shall destroy all the peoples that the Lord your God will give over to you. Your eye shall not pity them. In the book of Esther we read, So the Jews struck down all their enemies with the sword, slaughtering and destroying them, and did as they pleased to those who hated them. In the citadel of Susa, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 people. Now, the other Jews who were in the king's provinces also gathered to defend their lives and gained relief from their enemies and killed 75,000 of those who hated them. In another passage in Deuteronomy, we read, And we captured all his cities at that time and utterly destroyed every city, men, women, and children. We left none remaining, only the cattle we took as spoil for ourselves with the booty of the cities which we captured. In the 20th chapter of the book of Deuteronomy, we read, When you draw near a city to fight against it, offer terms of peace to it. And if the answer to you is peace and it opens to you, then all the people who are found in it shall do forced labor for you and shall serve you. But if it makes no peace with you, but makes war against you, then you shall besiege it. And when the Lord your God gives it into your hand, you shall put all its males to the sword. But the women and the little ones, the cattle, and everything else in the city, all its spoil, you shall take as booty for yourselves, and you shall enjoy the spoil of your enemies, which the Lord your God has given you. But in the cities of those peoples that the Lord your God give you for an inheritance, you shall save alive nothing that breathes, but you shall utterly destroy them. In the book of Joshua, we read this harrowing account. When Israel had finished slaughtering all the inhabitants of Ai in the open wilderness where they pursued them, and when all of them to the very last had fallen by the edge of the sword, all Israel returned to Ai and attacked it with the edge of the sword. The total of those who fell that day, both men and women, was 12,000, all the people of Ai. For Joshua did not draw back his hand, with which he stretched out the sword, until he had utterly destroyed all the inhabitants of Ai. Only the livestock and the spoil of that city Israel took as their booty, according to the word of the Lord that he had issued to Joshua. So Joshua burned Ai and made it forever a heap of ruins, as it is to this day. In another chapter of the book of Joshua, we read, And Joshua took Makkedah on that day and struck it and its king with the edge of the sword. He utterly destroyed every person in it. He left no one remaining. And he did to the king of Makkedah as he had done to the king of Jericho. Then Joshua passed on from Makkedah and all Israel with him to Libnah and fought against Libnah. The Lord gave it also and its king into the hand of Israel, and he struck it with the edge of the sword and every person in it. He left no one remaining in it, and he did to its king as he had done to the king of Jericho. So Joshua defeated the whole land, the hill country and the Negeb and the lowland and the slopes and all their kings. He left no one remaining, but utterly destroyed all that breathed, as the Lord God of Israel commanded. And Joshua defeated them from Kadesh Barnea to Gaza, and all the country of Goshen as far as Gibeon. Over the centuries, of course, there have been important changes in Jewish community attitudes and behavior. Jews today do not strictly obey all the rules and commands laid down in their religious writings. For example, Jews no longer put to death women caught in adultery, or kill anyone who works on the Sabbath, or put to death anyone who curses his father or mother. All the same, the weight of tradition is a heavy one, especially when based on writings that are held to be sacred. Something of the attitude of separateness, chosenness, and superiority laid out in the Hebrew Scriptures persists to the present and is manifest in policies of Israel and of the organized Jewish community. A Jewish scholar, Israel Shahak, who for years was a professor at Hebrew University in Jerusalem, provides many examples of this in modern-day Israel in his eye-opening book, Jewish History, Jewish Religion. One prominent American Jewish community leader who has publicly affirmed this view of Jews as a special and superior people is Abraham Foxman, head of the Anti-Defamation League, one of the most influential Zionist groups. In the ADL newsletter, Foxman wrote, "The Holocaust is something different. It is a singular event. It is not simply one example of genocide, but a near successful attempt on the life of God's chosen children and thus on God himself. It is an event that is the antithesis of creation as recorded in the Bible and, like its direct opposite, which is relived weekly with the Sabbath and yearly with the Torah, it must be remembered from generation to generation." The Jewish sense of alienation from and abiding distrust of non-Jews is also manifest in a remarkable essay published in April 2002 in The Forward, the prominent Jewish community weekly. Entitled, "We're Right, the Whole World's Wrong," it is written by Rabbi Dov Fisher, an attorney and a member of the Jewish Community Relations Committee of the Jewish Federation of Los Angeles. Rabbi Fisher is also National Vice President of the Zionist Organization of America. So this essay was not written by an obscure or semi-literate scribbler, but rather by a prominent Jewish community figure. And it did not appear in some marginal periodical, but rather in what is perhaps the most literate and thoughtful Jewish community weekly in America, and certainly one of the most influential. In his essay, Rabbi Fisher tells readers, "If we Jews are anything, we are a people of history. Our history provides the strength to know that we can be right and the whole world wrong." He goes on, "We were right and the whole world was wrong. The Crusades, the blood libels, and the Talmud burnings in England and France, leading those nations to expel Jews for centuries. The Spanish and Portuguese Inquisition, the ghettos and the Mortara case in Italy, Dreyfus in France, Bilas in Russia, and a century's persecution of Soviet Jewry. The Holocaust, Kurt Waldheim in Austria. Each time, Europe stood by silently or actively participated in murdering us, and we alone were right, and the whole world was wrong. Today, once again, we alone are right, and the whole world is wrong. The Arabs, the Russians, the Africans, the Vatican proffer their aggregated insights into and accumulated knowledge of the ethics of massacre. And the Europeans, although we appreciate the half-century of Western European democracy more than we appreciated the prior millennia of European brutality, we recognize who they are, what they have done, and what's what. We remember that the food they, Europeans, eat is grown from soil fertilized by 2,000 years of Jewish blood they have sprinkled onto it. Atavistic Jew hatred lingers in the air into which the ashes rose from the crematoria. Yes, once again, we are right and the whole world is wrong. It doesn't change a thing, but after 25 centuries, it's nice to know." Well, it should be mentioned that some of the rabbi's remarks here are gross distortions of history. To speak, as he does, for example, of a century's persecution of Soviet Jewry is a breathtaking falsehood. For one thing, the entire Soviet period lasted 72 years, not 100. And during at least some of that period, above all during the first 10 years of the Soviet era, Jews wielded a tremendous, if not dominant, power. Rabbi Fisher seems to have forgotten such figures as Leon Trotsky, commander-in-chief of the young Soviet state's Red Army, Grigory Zinoviev, head of the Communist International, and Yakov Sverdlov, the first Soviet president. The rabbi's essay is noteworthy not so much for his distortions of fact as it is for what it reveals of the mentality of the man who wrote it and of the literate Jews who published and read it, and for what it says about our times. For example, Fisher pins blame for the Holocaust, that is, for the event that Jews routinely regard as the single most horrible crime in history, collectively on non-Jewish humanity. This view, which has gained wider acceptance in recent decades, represents a drastic rewriting of history. During World War II itself, of course, Jews did not dare say to non-Jewish Americans that they actually shared blame and guilt with the Nazis for murdering innocent Jews in Europe. During the war, Jews said just the opposite. During World War II, and for some years after, the official story, the party line, if you will, was that responsibility and blame for the horrors of the Nazi era lay with Hitler and his Nazi henchmen. In the 1940s, 1950s, and 1960s, the prevailing story was that most Europeans, French, Austrians, Poles, Hungarians, and so forth, and even most Germans, were victims of the evil Nazis. Since the 1980s, the circle of guilt, the list of perpetrators, has grown steadily, so that not merely Hitler or the Nazis or the Germans, but now the French, the Hungarians, Poles, Ukrainians, the Vatican, in short, all of Europe, indeed, all non-Jewish humanity, is held to be collectively responsible for this allegedly greatest of all human crimes. Time and again in history, Jews have wielded great power to further group interests that are separate from and often contrary to those of the non-Jewish populations among whom they live. This creates an inherently unjust and unstable situation that all too often has ended tragically in violent conflict between Jews and non-Jews. In our age, the seemingly intractable Middle East conflict is more than just a problem of Zionism or politics or a dispute over land. Israel's often arrogant policies, and especially its inhumane treatment of non-Jews, have roots in centuries-old attitudes that are laid out in ancient Jewish religious writings. Thanks for being with me today. I hope you'll join me for the next World Watch broadcast. To learn more about the Institute for Historical Review and our work, please check out our website, ihr.org.
Thanks for listening. Mark Weber's World Watch returns Tuesday evening, 9 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.